Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So again, I'm not quite sure what I should speak about today, because it's really meant for like a class, and generally one subject leads into the other. One thing about understanding Shastra, or understanding anything, is you have to understand it in the context of how it's being said. It's like one time, two people were having a conversation, an argument, and I came, and I tried to give an opinion, and they both looked at me, and they said, you know, something like, how can you give an opinion? You don't know what we're talking about. Now, I heard what they were speaking about, but the real meaning of something is in the context of how it's being said. A lot of times you'll have a verse in the Shastra that will even appear to contradict our philosophy. But then you have to see what's said before, what's said after, etc. So I'm trying to figure out how I can teach something on this, and nothing that it's wrong with it, and just make it a Bhagavatam class, but there's nothing wrong with a Bhagavatam class, but this is supposed to be something else. So what I did is, I think what I'll do is I'll just pick out one short section, and we'll describe it on surrender. Because what happened here is one thing that Jiva Goswami, and it's his disappearance day, was discussing different types of bhakti. And then came to the point of pure devotional service. And then the question comes, how to practice it. So he starts describing in detail the different items of devotional service. And it's interesting that the first one is surrender, and then he describes sadhu sangha. Surrender means taking shelter. And without... because bhakti requires a sense of belonging to the Lord. Bhakti requires giving up your sense of independence. Bhakti means love. Love means surrender. But surrender is not the translation of sharanagati or sharanapati. Surrender is not actually the exact word, because in English, the word surrender has a connotation of being forced. Surrender means submitting out of love or knowledge. But when you say in English surrender, it has a sense of force. So, and no one likes to surrender. Unless you are surrendering to a higher principle, or surrendering to the object of your affection. So surrender is not an exact word. I'll tell you just one short story. I was in, maybe 20 years ago, in the Brooklyn Temple, ISKCON, and I decided to visit my brother who lives nearby and his family. I have an older brother and a younger brother. So actually, both brothers were going to be there. So I went, and I showed a slideshow. In one of the slideshows, it had a pictures. It had a Vyasasan of Prabhupada with someone standing before Prabhupada like this and someone paying dandavats. And as soon as my younger brother saw the picture, he spontaneously responded, "I don't surrender to no one." So, this connotation, and that's material consciousness. That's material consciousness. But in bhakti, the sense of giving yourself to another is the beginning of bhakti. In fact, the whole culture of India, that Varnashram culture, if you look at its connection with bhakti, it's to give its people experience of actually giving themselves to another. Right? In a good family, the child gives himself to his mother. What does that mean? It means that her desires become his desires. So, that sense, that feeling, that good experience with it is meant to be transferred to God and his devotees. Not to be limited, but the samskara is good. The samskara is good. And when you don't have that samskara, sometimes you have an attitude problem, they call it. Because you have such a bad experience with giving yourself to others in terms of exploitation or lack of reciprocation, that it becomes hard to give yourself to God. And that's why Krishna has made a culture in which to give Krishna consciousness. In the Bhagavatam, yesterday we were discussing the verses of Sutta Goswami when he says, "Dharmasya yapavargasya." That dharma is meant for liberation, and Jiva Goswami makes it very clear that liberation means bhakti. And he gives a verse from the Bhagavatam. I forgot where it shows. Oh boy, it would be nice. Yeah, I can even find it. I'll find that verse. Yeah. He gives a verse to show that apavarga is a word for liberation, actually means bhakti. So he quotes the Bhagavatam. "By following one's prescribed duty according to Varna's system, one also obtains apavarga, which is causeless bhakti yoga for Lord Vasudeva. This happens only when one obtains the association of the devotee." So the whole Varnashram is to get the association of devotee and surrender. So now this surrender, he's going to explain, is defined in Vaishnav Tantra. And most of you probably know the verse of the six symptoms of surrender. But there's a varied group here of people who are more experienced and less experienced. So I can say, anukulyasya sankalpa patikulyasya varjanam rakshayasyati vishvaso goptritve varanam tata atma nikshepa karpanya sadvirhasaranagati. So these are a firm resolve to act congenial to the Lord and the Lord's desire. A firm resolve. I will do what's favorable for pleasing the Supreme Lord and for developing that attitude. I will give up that which is unfavorable, firm faith that the Lord will give protection, deliberate acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian and nourisher, submission of the self, and humility. Which of those items is most important of the six? Anybody know? Of the six symptoms of surrender, which is the most important? Well, Jiva Goswami explains. He said these six items are divided into its whole and its parts. The fourth item, Goptvitve Varnam, or to accept the Lord as one's guardian, is the Angi, or the whole. The reason for this is that the concept of selecting someone as one's guardian is synonymous with the word Sharanagati, or approaching one for shelter. The other five are Angas, or parts, because they're assistants to this principle. So what it means is, what does seeking shelter mean? This is Goptvitve Varnam. What does seeking shelter mean? Shelter means is going where your needs are met. Everyone is looking to have their needs met. As you understand, we're part of Krishna, and the part feels completeness in relationship to the whole. In relationship to Krishna, we have full shelter, which means that all our needs are met. And what is the main need? The main need is for love. Without feeling love, which means to have love and to be loved, one will never feel complete. Because we are made, because we are part of something, we are made for a relationship to that which we are part of. And only in that relationship will we feel nourished. And therefore the whole material experience is that leaving that relationship, we feel incomplete. And we look for things and people and concepts to give us that satisfaction. But they are not our shelter. Because we can only be satisfied in relationship to God, because we're part of God and we're meant for His service. So if you look at the world, you take shelter of something. You take shelter of your lust. You take shelter of your greed. You take shelter of this relationship. You take shelter of this thing. And everyone has some concept we can see. Material concept. This thing will give me shelter. But they can never satisfy or sustain the self. Therefore, Prabhupada gives a very interesting definition of dharma. And I'll show you how Prabhupada uses words in a very simple and communicative way, and they have volumes of meaning. Prabhupada defines dharma as occupation. Now, that seems like a very simplistic definition of dharma. But he further goes, he says, what is occupation? That which sustains the self. So if you have a bodily concept of the self, then your job is your dharma. If you have a mental concept, then your books and your library is your dharma. But if you have the real concept of the self as the soul, your occupation is to serve Krishna. That's your dharma, because only that can fully sustain the self. Because we are made of and we're made for God. So only that will be real shelter. And until we come to that point, there'll always be some feeling of need or lacking. And since the real need is to serve and to love, Prabhupada made this point very clear. He gave the example of a very, very old lady He gave an example of a very old lady who lost all her family, no children, nothing, and then she gets a dog. In America, this is very common. You don't see this here so much. Maybe now. Because what Prabhupada said, dharma is essence. The essence is that quality which cannot be taken away. So the quality which cannot be taken away from us is the need to serve, the need to love, and the need to be loved. And only where that loving propensity can be fully reposed in a satisfactory way will we feel shelter. And because our eternal relationship is with God, and God being omnipotent, omniscient, and having full potencies, only by reposing our love in God can that loving propensity be fully satisfied. Can we feel shelter? So the main item of surrender is where we repose our love. Because that's our greatest need. That's where we are protected. That's where our guardian is. The one who not only can supply us love, but supply us everything we need to have that feeling perfectly. And our shelter is only that who is worthy of love, who actually is all attractive. Until we come to Krishna or God, we'll always feel a lacking. And that was the very good example of Vyasadeva when he wrote the Vedic literatures. Did everything perfect. Presented the whole Vedic, you know, so many things. And he himself was disciplined. Did so much work on behalf of Guru and Krishna, compiled the Vedas, perfect in so many ways. Therefore, he couldn't understand, why am I feeling dissatisfaction? I explained Sunday Prabhupada's brilliance in saying the fundamental question of the human being is why I am suffering. Because why? Just think how... Why is that such a profound thing? Because he's saying the difference is we can inquire into suffering. So what does it mean? You looking for someone? Okay. What does it mean? Why am I suffering? What am I doing wrong? What should I be doing? Who am I? What am I made of and what am I made for? So until we have that type of shelter, we'll be dissatisfied. Now, so he says the reason, okay, the other fives are part. Okay, now he's going to define each item. Acting congenially means to do that which is pleasing to the Lord and his devotees, or to adopt that which nurtures the mood of surrender. So the symptom of taking shelter is that you'll repose your love in your shelter, because your main need is to satisfy your desire to serve. And therefore, if you to take shelter of Krishna means to do what is pleasing to Krishna, or to do anything which is nurtures that sentiment in you that this is shelter. Avoiding unfavorable acts means to reject all that is displeasing the Lord and his devotees, or to give up that which is detrimental to the mood of love. So to take shelter means that whatever is not pleasing to Krishna, you give up, because you've taken shelter there, that Krishna can actually satisfy your needs, which means mainly to satisfy your heart. He's the proper object of our devotion. And therefore, when you take shelter, naturally, anything which is displeasing, you will give up. Or things that nurture, or things that are detrimental to that mood of Sharanagati. Now, what does firm faith in the Lord's protection mean? Can anybody say? That's the next item. What does it actually mean? Does it mean that if there's a war and you have your duty, you're a soldier, because you surrendered to Krishna, you will never be killed? Here's the reference from the Bhagavatam. What? What? It's from 3:16:37. What is that, Garunga? What story? 3:16. It says, this is with the verse. You see, like I say here, no time to prepare. Otherwise, I would have read all the verses. Then I would have, that really, so you can write it down. Look at it. Hear what it says. Sri Bhagavan, who is the master of the three worlds and of the three qualities, three qualitative aspects of material nature, will certainly act for my best interest. And really what that means is, what is my best interest? My best interest is my devotion. Real interest is devotion. So you have faith in the Lord's protection means that whatever he does is actually meant to protect my devotion. And therefore, to protect my devotion, he may take away, he may give, He may send some calamity. He may take my body. But the devotee has firm conviction that he's always acting for my best interest. Therefore, actually, Prabhupada's godbrother, who is a good philosopher, Bhakti Rakshaka Sridhar Maharaj, said a very interesting thing. He said, if you're not an optimist, you're an atheist. And that's actually when you give yourself to the shelter of Krishna, he gives you shelter. Therefore, he does what's best for you. And therefore, one who actually has surrendered to Krishna, he experiences this. And therefore, he is not even fearful of death. Because he realized is that when Krishna takes away his body, it's only to give him a better chance to remember him. Firm faith. And when you surrender to Krishna, you experience that. Any questions so far? Yeah. Okay.
When we see these specific qualities of pure devotional service,
yeah,
you're teaching the philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we understand, then we realize that actually we have no devotion. So it's like realizing the negativity of our qualities.
Yeah.
So how is it possible that when we feel like that, you know, I have nothing.
Yeah.
At the same time, you have a hope for preaching to conditioned souls. They are like, they have no understanding of devotional service. So where do you get that positive feeling that when I feel that I have no hope, so how can I give hope to others? So where do they get that strength to preach?
He said it, well, okay, well, a devotee has no hope. But that gives him hope. Because Krishna is merciful. The negative attracts the positive. So the more you feel need, the more you attract charity and mercy. So this is when a devotee is feeling that way, in fact, that's the only way you can actually experience bhakti. In a sense of humility and need, you can experience mercy. You can't experience mercy without humility. Because if something comes and you're feeling so deserved, let's say someone gives you $100. You have no money, but somehow an illusion, you feel I have $1,000. Will you feel that this person has been kind to me? Let's say you feel somehow you're an illusion that you're a billionaire and someone gives you $10. You have nothing. He gives you will you feel this person has given me mercy? So mercy requires a sense of humility and need. So actually to experience love of Krishna, this is a very interesting point, listen carefully. To experience love of Krishna, I'll say it another way. Let me ask you. Why is the taste for the holy name dependent on humility? Srinadapi Sunichena. Kirtaniya Sadahari. Why can you only chant constantly? When it says Kirtaniya Sadahari, it means that you can constantly do kirtan. Why? Because you're doing it with love. You can't do an activity without love, which is pleasure. Any activity is burdensome. No one likes work. Why? because there's no love.
So when it says Kirtaniya Sada Hari, that you can always chant the holy name of Krishna, it means you're doing it with love. So love is pleasure. So why is humility connected to the pleasure you get from chanting? There's many reasons. One reason is that it's natural to love those who are kind to you. And mercy or kindness requires an object of kindness. Mercy requires an object of mercy. So unless one is humble, he will not feel mercy. And if you don't feel mercy from someone or something, you will not feel love for it. So when someone feels, I have no hope, that's the mood of a devotee. But that humble mood attracts mercy. And one experiences Krishna's mercy, and therefore one develops love for Krishna. Therefore, a symptom of bhava is asabandha, which means your hope cannot be bound. Hope against hope. No hope but hope. What's the no hope? No hope is my qualifications. What's the hope? Krishna is charitable to those who are needy. So if we're feeling I have no quality, that will make us a preacher. Because we'll be able to communicate Krishna's mercy. And I saw that when I first came to a temple in San Francisco. First year I was coming to a temple and I saw Jayananda. And he was in the temple preaching to some working class immigrants and some nuns. Very humble people. Very working class, perhaps, immigrants, maybe from Eastern Europe, working class people. And I saw the compassion in which Jayananda was preaching to them. He was practically begging him. I could see it was so connected to his own humility that he was feeling so much mercy. He was appreciating so much what he got because he wasn't feeling deserving of it. And because of that spirit, he had so much value for Krishna, so much appreciation. And because of that realization of appreciation, with so much conviction, he could try to give it to others. But I think it's favorable. Any other questions? So, now we have three items. You do what's favorable. And this is when you, these are the symptoms of your faith. This is your symptoms of taking shelter. When you take shelter of someone who is a worthy shelter, the symptom is because you are feeling so much relief, so much fulfillment, the symptom is you do what's ever pleasing to them. And you do what's ever favorable that nurtures that sentiment that this is my shelter. You give up what's ever displeasing and reject all things that are unfavorable for this sense of shelter. Taking shelter is a manifestation of love. My needs are met here. And I have my need to love can be reposed here, and it will be reciprocated. And whatever I need for nourishing the core sense of myself will be protected. And especially what will be protected? Our bhava, our devotion. Krishna If you take shelter of Krishna, the symptom is you'll have full confidence that whatever happens is in the best interest of your devotion. And that's a fact. Because whatever comes to us by our destiny is specifically geared to elevate our consciousness. And if we know how to respond to what happens to us, according to all these stories, what are the stories in all the Bhagavatam? There are different circumstances of life, and they teach the lessons of how to respond to them to extract the fruit of destiny, which is realization. Now, next one is Atma Nikshepa. Submission of the self is described in the Gautamiya Tantra. I shall act as directed by the Lord who is situated within my heart. In other words, I will act, I will move, not according to my own desires, but according to the will and desires of the Supreme Lord who's in my heart. That's what surrendering the self means. It means I'm giving up this independent mind, that I will act independently of the pleasure and will of the Supreme Lord situated in my heart. And now there's a very nice explanation of this from the Uttarakhanda of the Padma Purana in relationship to the explanation of the word Namaha. In the word Namaha, the syllable Ma means ego, and Na means negation of the same. So what does offering obeisances mean? It means I am giving up ego, that I am the enjoyer and the controller. I'm giving up the false sense of ego, the false sense of independence, and I am accepting the will and authority of God as the will and authority of my life. Therefore, the word Namaha indicates the living being's relinquishment of the false sense of independence. So this is another sense of taking shelter with full conviction and full faith that this is my shelter. The living being is dependent upon the Lord. Indeed, the very essence of his existence is utterly reliant on the Lord. He should thus abandon in all respects the sense of his own proficiency separate from the Lord. It means whatever power you have, you don't claim proprietorship for it. You may have power, but you see that as a power given by God to be used in his service. You never see that it's your own power. And I give you an example of this, but I don't know if it's a good example for here. No, it's not a good example from here. Okay, I'll tell the example. When I was very young, I don't know if it's a good example or not. What? Say it? Okay. You know, when I was young in high school, there was free mixing of boys and girls, not like India. At least not like India of past. So the young boys, they were all attracted to this one girl. And she was a very beautiful girl. And all the people were attracted to this one girl. So then I was doing Harinam on the streets of Manhattan, right down on Fifth Avenue. out of a building comes a very respectable businessman. And he has those kind of blue suits and those very nice shoes and the briefcase and the white shirt and the tie. And he looks at me. And I can't even say the expression he said. But it was an expression of complete shock. Holy! It was a good friend of mine. So I met him on the street, I talked, and I was doing a program that night. And I invited him, and he came. And he brought another old friend of mine, just like Ramnath Swami has his Gary and his Steve and his Frank. This was my Jeffrey and Jan. These are my friends. But interesting, my best friend from high school, oldest friend, still my best friend, he wrote me that he wanted some of these pictures of Krishna I used to give him. So my friend said, he said, "Do you remember that girl?" I said, "Yes." "Do you hear what happened to her?" I said, "What?" He said, "Well, the next year she went with this person and this person left her and she became depressed and she gained 250 pounds. And for the last 35 years, you know where she lived? She's sitting on her front porch." And then I understood. Beauty is not ours, it's taken away. Intelligence is not ours, it's all invested by God. It's not part of our soul. Taken away. So that sense, this is Atmanishepa. We don't claim anything independent of God. That's a symptom of Sharanagati. Remaining free from all anxiety by taking refuge by the Lord's potency, there is nothing unattainable for such a person. So if you become humble and dependent on God, then there's no limit to how much God can use, work for you, and how much potency He can give you. But you can't claim it independently as your own. Remaining free from all anxiety by taking refuge of the Lord, one should engage in activities for his satisfaction. Very nice verse. Listen to this. From Brahma Vavarta Purana, it is therefore said, for those who are devoid of ego, Sri Keshava is not at all distant. But for those who are full of ego, mountain ranges stand between them and the Lord. Mountain ranges, Himalayas, Kilimanjaro, Mount Rushmore, they stand between you and the Lord, ego. So these are the symptoms of one who has full confidence that the Lord is my shelter. Thus in the prayers of Brahma in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear of the material bondage of those who are proud of their false independence. Granga 399. I'll give you the first word, okay?
964.
No, I don't know this. I don't know, you know, every verse. You just know most of them. Yavat prataktvam idam atmana. It says, O Lord, as long as the living beings consider themselves separate from you due to the influence of the deluding potency, which entices them towards material sense enjoyment, they cannot get free from this material existence, even though it is essentially unreal and generates temporary results. Anyway, that's just the common Krishna conscious philosophy. That by constitution, we're part of God and we're meant for His service. That's who we are. If we want to be anything else but a part of God and meant for His service, if you have any other desire, that desire can only be fulfilled in illusion. Right? If someone's a man forgetting operations and he wants to be a woman, he can't be by his nature. He can only do it in illusion. So we're part of God, we're meant for His service, and this is the basic Krishna conscious philosophy. And when our desire exceeds or is greater than what we can attain in reality, that desire can only be fulfilled in illusion. So what is Maya, or illusory potency? It's a potency to fulfill our desire to be something which we are not. So if you want to get free from that illusion, you only can change the desire. Because the illusion is following your desire. Illusion means two things. It means not to see what's there and to see what's not there. So if you don't want to be a servant of Krishna, the only way you can fulfill that is to be in the illusion that you're not. And if you want to be the controller and the enjoyer, the only way you can satisfy that is to be in the illusion that you are. And therefore, nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam. What is it? Come on. He fulfills our desire. So we're desiring to be something which we are not, and it's satisfied in the illusion that I am, the illusion that I am not a servant, the illusion that I am the enjoyer and controller. So it's the desire to not be a devotee which puts us in the illusion that we are not a devotee but the enjoyer and controller. And therefore, unless you surrender, unless you change that desire, you cannot overcome that illusion. And therefore, he'll quote later the same verse, Daivyesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Dharatya Mameva Ye Papadyante Mayam Etam Tarantyate. That it's a divine energy. And what is the purpose of that divine energy? To satisfy your desire. To satisfy your desire for what? To satisfy your desire for illusion. So unless you give up the desire for illusion, you can't get rid of it. So unless you surrender and give up that desire to be the enjoying control, you can't get rid of that illusory energy. That's what it says. Now the last item is karpanya. Humility is described as follows. From the Padyavali. O Lord, there is no one more... This is a symptom of surrender. There is no one more merciful than you. There is no one more deplorable than me. So, humility, when you accept that there's a shelter, that means that there is a being who satisfies your needs. You're accepting that that being is a superior being and that you are dependent on that being. And because your needs are being satisfied, including your desire to love and be loved, one who actually accepts that shelter and is experiencing that protection and mercy and nourishment, they're very satisfied in that position. And therefore we see in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Narada Muni is looking for the best devotee, and he says, oh, you're the best devotee. They don't want to hear it. Why don't they want to hear it? because that sense of humility is allowing them to experience Krishna's mercy and love. And one is so satisfied in that position. They're so satisfied in the mood of a loving relationship with Krishna. And therefore they're so satisfied as being a humble recipient of the affection and mercy of Krishna that they go like this and they stay like this and they won't get out of this position. And if someone says, no, you are great, it's so antithetical against their mood, because pride will ruin that relationship. Pride will prevent one from experiencing that love. Mercy flows down so the devotee is satisfied. Because as he's experiencing God's mercy and kindness, naturally the love for the Supreme Lord in his heart is swelling. He's so satisfied. And therefore, a symptom that one has actually accepted the Supreme Lord as his shelter, that he's completely dependent and reliant on the Supreme Lord, is a satisfaction with that humble position. And they feel it. I'll tell you a very interesting story. There was one old man. He's actually a nice man. Actually, I don't know if you ever met him. His name is Fakir Mohan. He's a simple man. Now, he likes to respect the senior ISKCON Vaishnavas. He looks for them. Oh, where is this one? Where is that one? Oh, is this one here? He has that mood. So he puts his Bhaktivinod Thakur deities on the altar. And for 1 month he stays there. So he heard, I was telling this morning, that Parthasarathi Prabhu is there. He couldn't find where he's staying, because in Vrindavan people stay different places around. So he saw me, my place. He said, I just went to see Sachinandana Swami. I just went, have you seen Parthasarathi Prabhu? I couldn't find, I know where he is. He said, okay, let's go. He's an old man, but we walked. So he went to Parthasarathi and paid his respects, very happy to see Parthasarathi Prabhu. And Parthasarathi said, oh, I feel very bad. My mother and my sister and my brother and my aunt are here. And like most Hare Krishna devotees, we took sannyas. We gave up our families. Now, they're getting older. We try to somehow... And his parents came, his mother came all the way to India. He said, no, I'll also go. So we go, and then Parthasarathi's mother comes out. She's a fine British lady, kind of very fine and, you know, kind of humble. She has gray hair, like bushy gray hair. And when he comes, he pays full dandavats to her. Then Partha is so embarrassed when he gets up. He said, this is such and such. He's a, you know, Sangeetacharya. You know, he was head of the Sanskrit school. He's a Naishtika Brahmacharya. He goes on and on and on and on and on and on. And then Fakir Mohan said, no, I was trained this way. And he said, I was studying with this biggest scholar in Orissa. But whoever came in, even a sweeper, he would pay his obeisances. And then he looked at her and he said, this is our culture. And then he thought, no, not just our culture, we feel it. And then Partha's brother came in, you know. His brother, and he paid obeisances to him. And he, oh my God. It was like so. I'll tell you another story with Prabhupada. Prabhupada had just defeated a Mayavadi. There's one story. He had defeated a Mayavadi. He was speaking in a place called Kobe, Japan, and it was a joint program, and there was a big Vyasa-san for the speaker. So Prabhupada got onto Vyasa's son and spoke. And then, after he spoke, the Mayavadi came in, and Prabhupada wouldn't get off his seat. The Mayavadi had to sit lower. And Prabhupada was sitting, listening. Then all of a sudden, the Mayavadi started to speak, and Prabhupada was listening, listening. And then when he spoke, Pancho Poshana, all the gods are equal. Prabhupada pointed to Burijan, to Burijan's cartels, and said, stop him. So Burijan was holding the cartels. So Burijan, he said, no, he wants me to do kirtan. So Burijan led a kirtan and they stopped or something. Then later on, Trivikram Swami, very nice sannyasi, oldest sannyasi in our movement actually, 35 years. He was massaging Prabhupada's shoulders. Massaging his shoulders. And he was getting some visualization from his past youth and experience. So he was envisioning that it was a fight ring. And Prabhupada had just knocked out the Mayavadi. And he was sitting on the, and he was getting him ready for the next round. So he was massaging. So he said to Prabhupada, and he said, Prabhupada, you're the greatest. Because that fighter used to say, I am the greatest. He said, Prabhupada, you're the greatest. And he said, Prabhupada said with such conviction, he said, no, I'm just a servant. So that's the mood. One other story was interesting. There was a sannyasi from the Gaudiya Math who came to America. Prabhupada asked him in 1950, Prabhupada stayed with him and asked him, he was named Mangaloy Brahmachari. Then he became Mangal Maharaj. So he came to America and he was staying in our temple. He would sit and listen to all my classes. So when I went back to India, he came to see me. He said, my guru, Bhakti Dayata Madhav Maharaj, we're having his Tirubhavtithi. You come, please. I said, okay. So I come. Then he says, will you come upstairs? And one of my guru's godbrothers is there, Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj. You come see him. So I went, and he was like 98 years old, and he was hunched all over. And he was sitting. I sat, but then, it was fasting because it was a feast day. And then all of a sudden, the brahmachari ran in the room and said, it's time for the feast. And there was a stampede towards the door. He said, all the devotees must come now. It's time for the feast. The stampede towards the door. So I was sitting there and I watched this stampede. And then all of a sudden, that same brahmachari, he sees this old man walking towards the door. He said, where are you going? You know that we won't make you go downstairs. We'll bring the prasad up to you. And he said, when the Vaishnavas command, I must obey. So that's a symptom. When you find shelter, you develop a mood of humility and dependence. You don't have any separate sense of my power, my ego, my... It's all coming from Krishna. So you don't have any sense. What is your ego? It's my power, it's my strength, I can protect myself, I am... You don't have that sense. And therefore, the symptom of surrender is this great humility. It's all from God. It's all from Krishna. I'll just read a little more and then I'll stop. Because it goes on. Then the main item is accepting the Lord as one's guardian. That this actually is the person that can give me shelter. And it quotes from the Nisringa Purana. When a person takes shelter of me saying, O Lord of Lords, O Janardana, I submit myself unto you, I deliver him or her from all miseries. This acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian is done in three ways. You can do it with the body, the mind, and the speech. And this is expressed in the Hari Vamsa. So listen to this very nice verse, and I'll finish here. One is who has surrendered unto the Lord, who with his words exclaim. So this is how you surrender with your words. O Lord, I am yours. You belong to your guardian. Now with his mind, who truly adopts this mood within his heart. O Lord, I am yours. And with his body takes refuge in the holy places associated with the Lord's pastimes, experiences great satisfaction. That's 11th canto Bhagavatam. And it's almost finished. Those whose surrender is complete in every aspect previously described will swiftly attain the results of full surrender. Those whose surrender is not complete but is deficient in some aspects will attain a result in accordance with their actual degree of surrender. And then it describes, the final verse describes two results from surrender. You become free from misery and you're showered with nectar. 11.19.9 Uddhava. O Lord, for those whose hearts are scorched by the threefold miseries, on the blazing path of material existence, I see no refuge other than the cooling shade of your lotus feet, which are like an umbrella emitting a delightful shower of nectar. So two results, free from misery and showered with nectar. We'll finish for today. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.